Will you join me today here on this Friday, February 25th, 2022? This is Mike Adams with a situation update. Will you join me today in offering prayers to both the people of Ukraine and the people of Russia? And someone might ask, why? What? According to the Western media, you're supposed to hate the people of Russia and love the people of Ukraine. How dare you offer prayers? No, no, no. You know what, folks? You know what the truth is? The people of Ukraine and the people of Russia are just like the people of Canada and the people of America and the people in Australia and everywhere else. The people don't want violence. They don't want war. They don't want conflict. They don't want suffering or fear. The people are sick and tired of their insane, tyrannical, globalist leaders pushing conflict and lies and propaganda and biological weapons and vaccines and all this garbage. The people are tired of it. The people don't want the war. And so I pray today that people everywhere across our planet find peace and liberty. But one of the things that has to happen in order to be safe in a world, to be able to live with peace and with liberty, is at some point, you gotta stand up to the bullies. And then what we're actually witnessing right now with Ukraine and Russia is two competing narratives about who are the bullies. So according to Western media, Russia's the bully. You know, Biden said yesterday that Russia is the aggressor. But according to Putin, Western and NATO forces are the bullies because they keep pushing eastward and they are the Nazis. And Putin says he's engaged in the denazification of Ukraine. So I guess a lot of this comes down to sort of which version of reality people choose to believe. But I believe that in every version of reality, nobody wants to suffer and die. Nobody wants violence. Nobody wants collapse. Nobody wants to see refugees fleeing Kiev or other cities. And that's why I am offering prayers for everybody involved in this conflict today. Whether you're Russian or Ukrainian or Russo-Ukrainian, you know, whether you're in the Donbass region or Kiev or Western Ukraine, I'm praying for all of you right now, praying for your safety, for your freedom, and for peace. All right, now, kind of an update from 24 hours ago or so. The Russian strategic missile strikes on military bases and airports, and looks like ammunition depots and other similar targets. It was quite extensive, a lot more than we had initially thought, and Russian forces have entered Ukraine from three sides, through the south, through the ports. Russia now controls Crimea, and they had an amphibious assault of Odessa and another port there. I forgot the name of it. Two ports on the southern edge of Ukraine. And then from the north, Russian forces entering from Belarus, which apparently Belarus allowed its territory to be used as a staging location for Russian forces. And we have tanks entering from the north. And then from the east or southeast, the Donbass region, of course, we have Russian troops, you know, along with support equipment, artillery, and so on. So really, Ukraine was being hit by Russian forces from three sides, not the west side, but north, south, and east. And in addition, there were paratroopers that were landing at certain airfields. And there was one airfield, I believe, just 10 kilometers away from Kiev that was taken by Russia through the use of paratroopers. There were reports that the Ukrainian military was able to take it back and fight off the Russian paratrooper forces, but that was not confirmed. I'm not sure about that situation right now. But where things stand right now, and remember, I'm recording this actually late in the evening of Thursday, the 24th, it is widely believed by, well, shall we say, U.S. intelligence sources. So who knows? Is it propaganda or is it truth? Well, it's widely believed that Russia is going to take Kiev in the next 24 hours or so. And as of a few hours ago, Russian forces were reportedly just 20 kilometers away from Kiev. No doubt they're already there by the time you hear this, because we don't get this out until the morning. So there can be, you know, an 8-hour delay or sometimes more, 10 hours delay. So Kiev may already have fallen by the time you hear this. You might want to check the news headlines and see what's going on. And Putin has given a speech, and he has said that his goal is to topple the Ukrainian leadership. He said his goal is not to occupy Ukraine and not to target civilians in any way, but rather to take out the Ukrainian leadership, which he describes as Nazis. And by the way, there is absolutely an element of truth to, you know, the Nazi ties, the history of some of the Ukrainian leaders having ties to Nazis. That's not all just made up stuff, by the way. So there is some element of truth. And remember, we got to go back to World War II to understand that Germany invaded Russia through Ukraine. Well, I mean, I guess at the time it was all Russia, but in modern day Ukraine, those were the front lines of Germany in what, 1941, 1942, moving eastward into Stalingrad, as I've described before. So Russia has a history of fighting Nazis, and a history that's not that long ago, by the way. Now, from Zelensky's side of Ukrainian leadership, the Ukrainian president has declared martial law and has declared a general mobilization order, which means, in effect, they are drafting, or they appear to be drafting, all males in Ukraine aged 18 to 60. And right now, it is illegal for Ukrainian men between those ages to even leave the country. And when I first saw this, I thought, oh my goodness, you know, this is an act of desperation to start naming men up to the age of 60. I mean, that does remind me of what Hitler used to do to recruit old men into fighting his wars of, in that case, of expansion, you know. This is a very worrisome development, because I can tell you that most of the men, young or old, in Ukraine, they don't want to fight. They don't want to go to war. They just want to be with their families and work their jobs and run their businesses and enjoy life as Ukrainians. And, you know, we have a source in Kiev, and he was very specific in explaining to me that the people of Kiev, or most of them that he knows, they do not consider themselves to be Russians. They are Ukrainian, and they appreciate that national identity, and they want to remain Ukrainians. They don't want to go to war and fight and die, but they also don't want to be subsumed under the under Putin and Russia. So, you know, it's quite a conundrum here. So the president of Ukraine is also handing out, by the way, automatic weapons to these civilians. Reportedly, there were 10,000 automatic weapons handed out to civilians. Now, this, to me, really smacks of desperation and a very, very dangerous thing. You don't just take civilians and just say, here, you have an automatic rifle, and you have an automatic rifle, and go fight the Russians, you know? That, number one, it's not very effective, because from a military perspective, you only have effectiveness when you work as a unit. You don't just throw guns in the hands of everybody and say, you know, go fight some Russians. What you have to be able to, well, first of all, you need to have trained as a unit. You have to be able to communicate as a unit. You have to have leadership for the unit, and you have to have unit mobility and cohesion. That's the only way to apply force or to project force. It's not just giving guns to civilians and saying, you know, have at it. It's a free for all. That's just going to get, that's going to get a lot of Ukrainian men killed, frankly, and which none of us want to see. And, you know, if I were a Ukrainian civilian right now, this is just my choice, I would not pick up an automatic rifle and try to engage Russian soldiers. You know, you're just going to end up getting shot by the extremely aggressive, well-trained Russian soldiers who are working as a unit with unit cohesion and communications and, you know, powerful weapon systems and so on. I would just try to get out of the way. Like, whatever the Russians are after, which seems to be the leadership of Ukraine, the Russians aren't leveling towns. You know, they're not leveling cities. They're not bombing Ukraine in the way that the Allies bombed Germany in World War II. like Dresden. Look up the history of the bombing of Dresden. I mean, that was a kind of a firebombing holocaust against innocent civilians carried out by, you know, American and British, i.e. modern day NATO forces, but against Germany at the time. Dresden, look it up. Well, Russia's not doing that. They're not firebombing civilian cities. They have specific targets they're going after. They're trying to, I believe, you know, topple the leadership of Ukraine. So I would hope that civilians avoid being caught in the crossfire of this. And I would pray and hope that all the civilians of Ukraine are able to exit the areas if it's safe to do so, or hunker down in your homes if you can't move, and, you know, don't go out in the streets and try to engage Russian soldiers. I think, but that's just my opinion. Obviously I'm not there and I'm not Ukrainian, nor am I Russian, obviously. So that's just my opinion, but we've all got to be really smart about this right now. And this is very different from previous wars in the sense that, you know, Russia has shown extreme dominance in its military tactics and the speed of its movement of seizing strategic targets or destroying strategic targets in Ukraine. The speed of Russia's movements here surprised everyone, including U.S. intelligence and including the Ukrainian people, and including myself. I did not expect Russia to move this quickly. I thought it would take, frankly, a few weeks or a few months to build up more troops. And I thought we were looking at a military conflict, I don't know, like May or June or something. But no, here we are. You know, sometimes things happen faster than I am predicting. And this is one of those cases. But we cannot underestimate the speed and the ferocity of the Russian military. Now, I'm going to go into a lot more analysis here because Joe Biden has made some statements that are horrific and false and so on. But first I want to cover something, a couple other stories. There's in Canada, Farm Credit Canada is now making a list of people who donated to the trucker convoy and people who participated. And Farm Credit is now canceling the loans. Suspending loans, making blacklists of anybody who participated in the Freedom Convoy. Now, Farm Credit is, I believe, it's a federal bank, and so it's run by the Canadian government, and it provides typically, you know, funding for agricultural, well, farmers, you know, food production people. So think about what Canada is doing to itself. It's kind of like what Germany is doing by cutting off Russia's Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which we talked about yesterday. So Germany's saying, oh, we're going to punish you, Putin. Let's just freeze ourselves with no natural gas for the rest of the winter. And let's have no fertilizer and let's have food shortages. Like, that's Germany saying, have you had enough yet, Putin? If not, we'll freeze even more and see if you like it then, right? It's kind of bizarre how Germany wants to punish itself and pretend that it's punishing Putin, which it isn't. But this situation in Canada is kind of similar. So it's like the government of Canada is saying, let's starve the citizens of Canada by shutting down the loans and financing of the food producers in Canada. And then I guess when the grocery store shelves are empty and food inflation is off the charts, then the government of Canada can say, well, how do you like that, farmers? We starved ourselves to punish you. Did it hurt you yet? If not, we'll starve even more and see if you like it then. So I don't know what it is about these governments, Germany, Canada, and Biden's doing similar things, where they just want to punish themselves or punish their citizens and pretend that it's hurting someone else. It's like this weird psychopathic, I don't know, it reminds me of, you ever have friends, or maybe not friends, but classmates in middle school or high school who like to hurt themselves, you know, they like to cut themselves. You ever have anybody like that in your school? Usually it was some drama queen girl who was always ended up on the suicide hotline, you know, and she would have scars on her wrists. Like, what happened? I tried to use razor blades again and I failed. You know, that kind of person. That's what the governments are like now. It's just like, you're committing suicide of your own food supply or your own economy, and then you're thinking that somehow that's a victory. It's not a victory. It's just stupidity or some kind of death wish. But again, that's the U.S., that's Canada, that's Germany, that's the U.K., frankly, too, and that's all these countries that went along with the vaccines, come to think of it. Just bizarre. And you know, in the bigger picture, on a global scale, Putin attacking Ukraine, that's not the craziest thing that's happened. Craziest thing in recent memory is every Western nation in the world attacking its own citizens with genocidal biological weapons, spike protein injections. And by the way, just as a reminder, and I'm not saying Putin is an angel or anything, because he's not, you know, former head of the Soviet, you know, secret service or whatever it was. Putin didn't kill Americans with vaccines. No. That was done by American doctors and American pharmacists and American hospitals and American bureaucrats. That's been done by Americans to Americans. And the same thing, you know, Canadians killing Canadians through vaccines and Aussies killing Aussies with vaccines and so on. That's crazy. I mean, just in America, we have now approaching at least 1 million deaths here. I mean, it's really more, but the current figures from VAERS support somewhere close to 1 million deaths. It wasn't Putin killing 1 million Americans. It was Big Pharma and the FDA and the CDC and the, you know, the journo-terrorism media lying about everything and the hospitals withholding access to ivermectin. And don't forget Fauci and the NIH and the bioweapons in the first place that started this whole thing. Who built the bioweapons? The original stuff came from America under Fauci, NIH money. And then it was transferred to China for more gain of function research, you know, to perfect the bioweapon and then unleash it upon humanity. Mwahaha. And they did. That's some evil stuff. That's way more evil than someone launching missiles or dropping bombs, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, we're just going to compare crimes against humanity. Let's make sure that, you know, we count the biological weapon attack on humanity that's been unleashed for the last 2+ years. That's a holocaust against humanity. And by the way, there's been breaking news on that front too, on the science front. This has been widely reported, but I'm reading it from WorldNet Daily here. Virus DNA matches code patented by Moderna 3 years before the pandemic. So there's been some research into the SARS-CoV-2 virus, you know, the genetic sequences. And they found that there's a sequence of DNA in the virus that perfectly matches the genetic sequence that was patented by Moderna 3 years before the pandemic began. And according to the analysis here, quote, the odds of Moderna's sequence occurring naturally are about 1 in 3 trillion. In other words, this is the smoking gun. And guess what it involves? Oh, the furin cleavage site, which is we've talked about so many times before. This is, quote, the part of the virus that binds to human cells, allowing it to cause infection. The furin cleavage structure could not have developed naturally. This new study published in Frontiers in Virology, the researchers compared the 30,000 letters of genetic code. That's funny they use the term letters. I mean, base pairs. Carrying the information needed to spread SARS-CoV-2 with millions of sequence proteins in an online database. And the study was conducted by Dr. Balamurali Ambati of the University of Oregon. Got that? Dr. Balamurali Ambati. Sorry, that's an interesting name. University of Oregon found that the SARS-CoV-2 virus shares a sequence of 19 specific letters with a genetic section owned by Moderna, and the Moderna patent was filed in February of 2016 as part of its cancer research. So there we go. This is indeed a smoking gun. This is proof that it was built in a lab. In fact, Moderna, the same company making tens of billions of dollars off the vaccine, patented the sequence that's found in the bioweapon that created the plague that pushed the vaccine. Interesting, isn't it? Kind of looks like one of the companies profiting from the vaccine may have been involved in the intellectual property that resulted in the creation of the virus itself, doesn't it? Kind of looks that way. So when Joe Biden says Vladimir Putin has unleashed an attack on the people of Ukraine, well, Big Pharma and the United States government have unleashed an attack on the people of every country, the whole freaking world. How about that? And no apologies for that, not even an acknowledgement that that's what happened. What, Biden is such a liar. I'm amazed he could even get through a speech. Do you have any doubt that if Trump were in the Oval Office right now, there would not be war in Ukraine right now? I think it's becoming increasingly obvious that Putin knows, of course, that Biden was installed as a fake president in a rigged election. And you know, a fake president is a weak president. It just shows weakness, especially when Biden can barely function. And when he craps himself while visiting the Vatican, and when he actually says to the Pope at the Vatican, and this is true, this is on video, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, he says something like, "Aren't you that famous African American baseball player?" He said that to the Pope, and the Pope's like, "Dude, what planet are you on?" And if Biden had been honest, he would have replied, "Oh, sorry about that. Don't worry, I was distracted because I was crapping my pants here in the Vatican." And, you know, Putin knows all of this. And so when you have a weak president, and Putin knows that Biden is broadcasting from a fake Oval Office, which is a soundstage. Yeah. Like, it's all theater. Putin knows the election was rigged. Putin knows Biden has virtually no support among the American people. Even the polls that show him at like 33% right now, those are rigged in favor of Biden. The real numbers, the real support for Biden in America might be 20%, maybe 1 out of 5, you know? So because Biden is supposed to be the president, the message to the world is that, oh, well, America is the Alzheimer's government right now. You know, that the American government is weak and stupid and can't control itself and is incompetent and so on. That's the message that Joe Biden just broadcasts to the world. It's like, you know, look at me, I'm the leader of America, and the rest of the world just can't stop laughing. Like, oh my God, you can barely function. You should be in a retirement home for dementia patients or something. So Putin sees that, and Putin's like, well, gosh, there's never going to be a better opportunity to do what I want to do, or what he wants to do in terms of taking back Ukraine, and I guess reabsorbing it back into Russia, where it had been before. Because America under Biden and under a, you know, an occupying enemy force, which is what the rigged election put us under, America is incredibly weak and very unlikely to respond to Russia in any kind of coordinated or effective way. And that is absolutely true. If you look at what the response has been from Biden, it's like, oh, we're going to have economic sanctions. And like, what economic sanctions? Oh, we're going to make it so Russia can't export certain things. And like, okay, I don't remember Walmart being filled with goods made in Russia. So next, like, that doesn't affect me. And, you know, he said, oh, we're going to ban the bank accounts of certain Russian people in Europe. It's like, what, Russian oligarchs and billionaires? That doesn't affect me. I don't know any Russian oligarchs or billionaires. Next. And then Biden's like, oh, we're going to ban exports of things like fertilizer from Russia. And you're like, doesn't Russia manufacture maybe 2/3 of the world's ammonium nitrate used in fertilizer? So if we ban that, doesn't it just hurt our ability to grow food? So are we like Germany, like beating ourselves in the face with a hammer, you know, or Canada, just bashing yourself on the head with a hammer, you know, it's like, we're going to keep hitting ourselves and punishing ourselves and starving until Putin makes it stop. It's like these economic sanctions do nothing, nothing. They're a joke. And Putin knows it. And Biden even said in his speech yesterday, he said, well, we're not going to send any troops there. There's not going to be any American troops fighting the Russians in Ukraine. We're just going to have economic sanctions. And these sanctions are so weak that do you realize that what Canada did to the Freedom Convoy protesters in terms of cutting off and looting their bank accounts, that that was far more aggressive than anything Joe Biden is doing to Russia? That's right. You want to talk economic sanctions, just look at Canada and how the Canadian government stole the bank accounts of its own citizens. That's effective. That's the government of Canada coming along and saying, we're just going to steal all your money. Nothing you can do about it. Good luck buying baby food, you know, or dog food or whatever. But Biden's not even doing that to Russia. It's not like Biden's going into Russian banks and stealing all of the deposits of Russian citizens. If he could do such a thing, that might be effective, but he can't. even though they may try. So I guess my plan, I was going to buy, because I was so much looking forward to buying a Russian car. You know, this is a joke. But now, due to the economic sanctions, I guess Russian car exports won't make it to America, and no one will be able to buy Russian cars for a while. But, I mean, the reason this is a joke is because look around. Do you see any car dealerships selling cars made in Russia anywhere in North America? No. Not at all. You got cars made in Korea and Japan and America and Europe. No cars made in Russia for sale in America. Not that I can think of. In fact, the closest thing that comes to mind, this is back in the late 80s, I think, was the Yugo. Remember? From Yugoslavia. There's another country that Western forces occupied and screwed up and caused a civil war, you know, come to think of it. And by the way, when Joe Biden gets up there and says, oh yeah, Putin's invading the sovereign state of Ukraine, you know what comes to mind to me? I'm like, yo, Joe, what about Yemen? Right. What about Panama? What about Libya? What about Iraq? All the countries that America invaded. What about the weapons of mass destruction? Total BS, made up, false intelligence to justify the attack on Iraq, huh? What about that? But America just attacks wherever America wants, you see. under these globalist cabal leaders like the Bidens and the Bushes and so on. Basically everybody except Trump, you know, at least from recent memory. I mean, if you're looking for who's the bully of the world, you would have to look at like which country drops the most bombs on other countries or invades other countries or meddles with other countries. Which country unleashes economic hitmen and carries out political assassinations against leaders in Central and South America? Oh, who's the bully of the world? Oh, well, for the last 75 years, it's the cabal leadership of the United States of America. All over the world, bombing countries and launching missiles. And the mainstream media never says that those countries have the right to protect their borders. You know, when bombs are dropping in Somalia or wherever. Under Bill Clinton or George Bush or whoever, the media is like, oh, this is necessary. This is absolutely necessary for national security. And we can't tell you why. All I mean is if we're going to have a rule that says no nation can just invade or attack or bomb other nations, then shouldn't that rule apply to, oh, I don't know, us? Perhaps should it apply to us too? Or is the United States exempt from this rule that we demand other nations abide by? This is my question. The hypocrisy is nauseating. Just nauseating. And by the way, wasn't America founded with a separatist movement? I mean, the colonists became separatists, right? You know, to get away from the King of England and the whole British monarchy system of corruption, which is still just as corrupt today, by the way. There are rumors that the Queen has died from COVID, but it might be just a rumor. I'm not sure. It's like, oh my goodness, they still have a queen. That's what's so bizarre to us Americans. You still have a queen? Yeah, this is 2022, people. Like, if that queen dies, you should just not have another one. Just let it end with that queen. Please, no more queens. My God. But we were founded as a separatist movement. Ever heard of the Declaration of Independence, huh? Ever heard of Thomas Paine? Ever heard, the British are coming, the British are coming. Ever heard of any of that stuff? Paul Revere, anything? George Washington, right? Yeah, we were founded as a separatist movement to get away from tyranny. So anyway, on a practical note, it looks like Kiev is just hours away from being toppled by Russian forces. And can I just mention one other thing? You know, I've commented about this from time to time, how the Russian soldiers are not soy boys. And they are not weak-willed woke-tards, okay? Whereas the U.S. Pentagon at the high levels of leadership, you know, they're just focused on how woke can we make the military, you know? How woke can it be? Can we have cross-dressing and women and transgenderism surgeries of soldiers, you know, just to virtue signal? And the Pentagon leadership has no interest in, you know, combat effectiveness, military hardware readiness, making sure planes can fly, making sure that F-35s... don't slam into the aircraft carriers and fall into the ocean, which happened recently. That's the Pentagon leadership. And I'm not talking about the soldiers throughout the entire ranks of the military, because I support the soldiers, and I know the soldiers agree with me for the most part. They just can't say anything without getting thrown into the brig, right? But the Pentagon leadership are a bunch of woke-tard lunatics who have zero interest in creating a military that can be effective. Well, Russia's military, you know what they just proved over the last, 36 hours or so? And I'm not applauding what's going on. I'm anti-war. Well, I don't want to see any war whatsoever. And I don't want to see the people of Ukraine threatened or, you know, their bases hit with missiles or anything like that. But to be honest, the Russian soldiers just literally demonstrated that Russia's military is an unbelievable fighting force with just extraordinary tactical coordination. And you think about all the missiles and the fixed-wing aircraft and the helicopters and the paratroopers and the tanks and the troops and the artillery and all that stuff. You know how hard that is to coordinate all that? And to see, you know, the discipline. I mean, the videos I've seen of the Russian soldiers, you know, they're moving as a team. They're moving with discipline. I don't see any cross-dressing, you know, girl dresses and high heels on the soldiers. They're from Russia. Whereas if they were, you know, U.S. forces controlled by the Pentagon, you know, they would have to have rainbow flags painted on the side of the helicopters and things like that. I didn't see any of that with the Russian forces. Again, I'm against the war. I'm against the conflict. I'm against all of the bloodshed, but what we've seen with the tactical readiness of the Russian forces should send us a very big message, which is, don't mess with Russia, because again, the American forces are nowhere near that ready, as we saw with Afghanistan. I mean, think about it. Under Biden, and I think this was all planned, the American forces evacuated from Afghanistan and Kabul, left behind, tens of billions of dollars of American hardware just handed over, you know, Humvees and aircraft and transport trucks and how many tens of thousands of rifles and night vision goggles and everything, just handed it over to the enemy in the worst military debacle in the history of America. And that was under Joe Biden, and I think it was all by design. Would Putin do that? Would Putin just have some kind of military retreat and leave behind, you know, billions of dollars of Russian helicopters and artillery? No. No, because that's only something that an insane, incompetent military would do, i.e. the leadership of the U.S. military under the woke-tard, you know, Democrat control. And Russia's not going to do that because, well, they're not stupid. I mean, they may be misguided in this. They may be, you know, causing a lot of pain and suffering and fear and economic destruction, which they are, but they are not tactically stupid, and they are not woke-tards. Let that be very clear to the world right now. We're going to get to some more practical things. Here's a statement from Ukraine President Zelensky. We're going to get to that. But first, two sponsors today, healthyheartclass.com. That is a docu-class series about how to repair and regenerate damaged heart tissue. And it features quite a collection of experts. It begins March 1st. It's free to watch the class. It was an episode each day. It's like a summit format. And it's healthyheartclass.com. It was put together by my friend Jonathan Landsman. And even though it's free, you do have the option to purchase the entire series as a downloadable collection of files. If you do make that purchase, we earn an affiliate fee that helps support us, but that's all completely optional. You don't have to purchase anything. Watch the whole thing for free, and you're going to learn a wealth of information. And right now, how do we repair our hearts and keep our vascular systems healthy? That seems really important in this age of spike protein bioweapons. So I have a very special interest in this class myself. In fact, I'm hoping Jonathan will give me, like, I don't know, some kind of password to just log in and watch it. I'm sure he will. But anyway, healthyheartclass.com. And the second sponsor today, which is becoming very important now, the satellite phone store. A lot of people are losing communications capabilities in Ukraine right now. If they had satellite phones, they would be able to make those calls from Ukraine as long as they could see the sky. So satellite phones are incredibly useful in war zones, obviously. Any kind of an emergency situation, an evacuation, if you're away from cell towers, or if you're on the ocean or out in a desert somewhere. The website is sat123.com. That's sat for satellite, sat123.com, satellite phone store. They're running out of hardware, as you might imagine. They're running out of phones. And probably going to be even more difficult to get the hardware now because of what's happening in Ukraine, you know, affecting the mineral supply, affecting microchips, affecting global supply chains. Man, actually, this is all going to suck for all of us. I'm just being honest. Our food prices are going to go up. You know, microchips are going to get harder to acquire. Oil prices are already through the roof. Did you know oil's over $100 a barrel right now? Do you know where that's headed? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if oil hits $150 a barrel in the next 60 days. I mean, it depends on what happens in Ukraine, frankly. So if there's a de-escalation, which is what we would want to see, oil might settle back down under 100. But if it continues to escalate there, we could see oil at 150, sort of headed towards $200 a barrel. And you know what that would do to gas prices in America? Especially in California, where gas prices are, you know, off the charts. Can you imagine rolling into a gas station in California? Like, how much is gas? $9 a gallon. How much do you want? Like, can I buy it in like fluid ounces or something? Do you have small portions? I got $5. How much can I get for $5? That kind of thing. It's like the income challenged people rolling through a drive-thru at McDonald's ordering chicken McNuggets, but it's like, I can't really afford all six nuggets. I think there's six. Can you sell me three? Can you give me three chicken McNuggets, but I want the full sauce with it? Right? Just start negotiating with people in the drive-thru.
No, sir, I'm sorry. We can't do three McNuggets.
Can you just throw some sauce packets out the window and I'll drive by and catch them? Just give me some sauce. You know, something like that. Kind of sad. All right, getting back to Kiev here. President Zelensky of Ukraine said, quote, "The enemy's sabotage forces have entered the capital. Me and my family are remaining." Well, that's interesting. Kind of seems to me, and this is just my guess, that within the next day or less, probably Zelensky is going to be, shall we say, you know, arrested or displaced, you know, removed from power. That's probably what's going to happen. He says, quote, "We need to talk about a ceasefire with Russia." Kind of think it's, we're way beyond a ceasefire. I think, what we're really looking at is, Ukraine's surrender to Russia. That's what it's looking like here. But Zelensky is very unhappy because he says that there have been years of promises from Washington and the West of a path to NATO membership, but then nobody's coming to help Ukraine right now when they're under attack. He says, quote, we're not afraid to talk to Russia. We're not afraid to talk about security guarantees for our state. We're not afraid to talk about neutral status. But what security guarantees will we have? Which countries will give them? Quote, we are left alone in defense of our state. Who's ready to fight with us? I don't see it. Who's ready to guarantee Ukraine's accession to NATO? Everyone is afraid, Zelensky said. I asked the 27 leaders of Europe whether Ukraine should be in NATO. I asked them directly. They're all afraid. And we are not afraid, he said. So, doesn't this expose the truth about Western NATO propaganda and lies and misrepresentations, right? They kind of shove Ukraine out there. You know, here, Ukraine, do what we tell you to do, and then we'll let you into our NATO club one day. Just follow our orders and say what we want you to say and allow us to move our missiles into your territory. Yeah. And then we'll let you join NATO one day if you're good enough, right? Something like that. That's what NATO did to Ukraine. And then when Ukraine is actually being struck by missiles and, you know, occupied by Russian forces, then all the NATO people are like, like looking away. What? I have nothing to see here. What's going on? Oh, we're busy. We're busy. We have other appointments to attend to. Sorry. Just shows you that NATO has no honor, you know, right? I mean, if they really were going to stand up for Ukraine, wouldn't they be there defending Ukraine in a military sense right now? Just wondering. And this is not about, you know, who's right or wrong between Russia and Ukraine and all that. It's just that NATO is made up of a bunch of liars and fraudsters and actual Nazis, by the way, like literal Nazis still in NATO and Marxists and fascists and so on. And by the way, Ukraine, I don't know if you know this, but they were pursuing nuclear weapons. And according to Putin, Russia says the final straw was Ukraine's declaration that they wanted to restore their status as a nuclear power, which means nuclear weapons. Now, before the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, of course, Ukraine had nuclear weapons. And Ukraine also had nuclear power, as you know, Chernobyl. Well, in 1991, or shortly thereafter, Ukraine, in effect, surrendered their nuclear weapons, gave them to Russia as the breakup of the Soviet Union took place. And I believe that at that time, Ukraine did not want to be subjected to the security threats associated with holding on to nuclear weapons. They thought it would be safer to be a nuclear-free nation that would be considered more neutral. Well, I guess Zelensky decided they wanted nuclear weapons again. And Putin decided that he could not allow that to happen because, you know, you don't want a, let's say, a NATO country. If you're Russia, you don't want a NATO country with nuclear weapons right at your doorstep where they could, you know, nuke Moscow in 3.5 minutes or something like that. That's not something that any nation wants is its strategic enemies to be able to launch weapons against it right next door. And that's the threat that Putin perceived in Ukraine potentially acquiring nuclear weapons. All right, in terms of the actual battles that have been taking place, this is from yesterday, but Ukraine claims to have taken out 30 Russian tanks, 130 armored fighting vehicles, 5 aircraft, 6 helicopters, and it's not known how many soldiers. But the losses to Ukraine are reportedly, of course, far greater, especially in terms of hard targets, airports, military installations, ammo depots, and so on. And Russia is reportedly preparing to begin a, quote, large-scale bombardment of Ukrainian capital Kiev around 3 a.m. Ukraine time. That's a CNN correspondent claiming that. Now, that time has already passed by the time you're hearing this. So check the headlines and see if that has happened. It probably has. And it reminds me to once again pray for the safety of all the people in Kiev in particular. If there's going to be a bombing of Kiev, my God. Better not be a bombing of civilian targets in Kiev. And I, so far, that's not what Putin is doing. He's hitting, you know, strategic targets, government installations, military installations. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I pray for the safety of especially all the civilians there in Kiev. And as you heard before, I pray for peace, and I pray for the safety of all people, Russia and Ukraine. I don't want to see anybody suffer from this. In fact, I wish the world would just get back to some peace and perhaps, you know, decentralize ourselves from all the corrupt, evil governments of the world. Just have, you know, the people with decentralized systems, freedom, you know, local food production, our own honest money systems, right? Free energy devices distributed all over the world. And we could just grow food and raise families and explore knowledge and, you know, enjoy life on planet Earth. Instead, we have all these evil, corrupt governments that build weapons, like America building, you know, the bioweapons here, or, you know, countries building nuclear weapons or what have you. They're all just building weapons, and then they can't wait to use weapons on each other and kill a bunch of people and pretend like they're all big and powerful, these governments. I'm sick of it. Now, there's an alternate angle on all of this that was documented at the website dailyexpose.uk. And the article's by Rhoda Wilson. Is there more to the Ukraine-Russia conflict than meets the eye? Now, I'd heard about this before. I hadn't covered it previously, but now that Rhoda Wilson has written this down, I'm going to go ahead and cover it. It turns out that a lot of the targets that were hit by Putin with missile strikes were actually U.S. biolabs in Ukraine, bioweapons laboratories. So as you can see, if you go to the website dailyexpose.uk, you can see the laboratories are located in Odessa, Vinnytsia, Ugorod, Kiev, Kherson, Crimea, Luhansk, and other possible locations, even Kharkiv, which was bombed quite extensively yesterday. And the theory says that the U.S. has been using Ukraine as a place to have biological weapons research facilities to build more bioweapons, and that these bioweapons would be used to, would be unleashed against Russia. So you know how China builds bioweapons and uses it to threaten the United States? Well, according to this analysis, the U.S. also builds bioweapons and may use them to threaten Russia or perhaps China or other nations. Now, since we know that the U.S. funded the gain-of-function development of SARS-CoV-2, it's no longer just a theory that the United States is engaged in illegal biological weapons gain-of-function development. And you know that's illegal, right? That's completely banned by international treaties, which means that every person and every bureaucrat who was involved in that should be prosecuted. But that's a different story. What if Putin is aware of these bioweapons facilities, which he no doubt is? And what if some of his attacks are designed to take out the bioweapons that could not just threaten the United States, but could also threaten all of humanity? So that's an interesting theory about some of what may be going on there. We can't know the mind of Putin and why exactly he's doing what he's doing. And I would expect that maybe his real motivations are complex and multifaceted, but certainly this could be one of the factors. And we do know that the United States is engaged in illegal biological weapons development. So if you ever wondered why the Clintons and the Bidens have such strong financial ties to Ukraine's government, you know, what's going on with Hunter Biden getting all these sweet deals, like making $1 billion from some Ukrainian natural gas company? And remember when Biden was on video bragging about how he was going to cut off $1 billion, or what was it, a multi-billion dollar aid program to Ukraine if the Ukrainian government didn't fire the prosecutor or the investigator looking into possible criminal violations of the company that Hunter Biden was involved with in Ukraine? Remember that? Biden bragged about that on video. He's like, and I called him up, and sure enough, you know, and I said, you're not going to get the $1 billion. Remember that video clip? We should play it, but it doesn't matter. You probably remember that. So there is no question that the corrupt elements of America's government, especially with the Clintons and the Bidens, you know, and Obama, have been engaged in a lot of nefarious financial activities and maybe a lot more involved with Ukraine's corrupt government leaders. And, you know, every government is corrupt at some level, so I'm not singling out Ukraine or America. Every government's corrupt. Like, every government is your worst enemy, it turns out, especially right now. That's what people are learning. But you got to wonder about all these financial ties and wonder why the corporate-run media and the White House, why their narrative is so strongly coordinated to condemn Putin and protect Ukraine. And if there's one thing we've learned over the last couple of years, it's that literally almost everything the media says is a lie. It's a calculated lie. And no matter what they say, your first reaction should be, that's a lie. You know, when they said, oh, masks work, it's a lie. When they said vaccines work, it's a lie. When they said Trump was working with the Russians, total lie. When they said Hillary Clinton wasn't spying on Trump, that was a lie too. We now know those are all lies. Well, now they're saying, you know, Ukraine, the Ukrainian government is wonderful and angelic and innocent, and Putin is evil and he's Hitler and he's the Nazi. Well, you know, the corporate media is lying. It doesn't mean we know what the truth is entirely, but we know that the media's claims are lies. No question about that. I think the only real question is, what are they hiding? Like, why are they lying? What is it that they're trying to cover up? And there are a lot of interesting theories about that. And one is what I just mentioned, that maybe these are bioweapons that are being attacked in Ukraine. There are other theories floating around out there. I can't confirm any of them, but one of them is that CIA documents and like Hillary Clinton documents and everything are stored in Kiev, that there's, I don't know, a bunker of secret documents that would expose the globalists, and that's what they're all trying to protect. And if Russia gets its hands on that trove of documents, then, you know, all the Western nations are screwed, right? Like, that's a theory. Is it true? I have no idea. But there are a lot of theories about what could be going on. Now, in the realm of something that is not a theory, but is actually true, Russia has banned exports on ammonium nitrate itself. And what's fascinating about that, and that, again, that's fertilizer, of course. But what's fascinating is that Russia announced that ban on February 2nd. That's right. Like, what, roughly three weeks ago or so? So Russia, you know, anticipated where this was going. This was all part of their plan. And they banned fertilizer exports for 2 months, knowing that they were going to have to conserve their own domestic fertilizer supplies because of what was coming, perhaps even anticipating economic sanctions. So this ban on ammonium nitrate, this is going to affect the entire world because Russia produces something like 2/3 of the total, you know, world supply of ammonium nitrate. You might say, well, why? Well, because Russia is rich with natural gas. And remember how I've talked about this, the Haber process. That's named after a German scientist, by the way. And in the Haber process, you convert hydrocarbons, i.e. natural gas, directly into ammonia, which is NH3. So you take nitrogen out of the air and you take hydrogen from fossil fuels, and using a process of very high temperatures and pressures, I think they have to do like 200 bar or something like that in terms of pressure, that causes the creation of ammonia, NH3, and which is the precursor to all these things like ammonium nitrate and so on. But this Haber process is very cheap if you have a lot of natural gas, which Russia does. So Russia can basically create fertilizer almost for free, which means they can feed their people quite well. And they can use natural gas to create a value-added product, i.e. fertilizer, and export that to the world. and thereby have, you know, economic productivity based on their natural resources. So even when Germany comes along and says, oh, we're going to shut down the pipeline here, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, we don't want your natural gas, Russia's probably just laughing. Say, okay, we'll just convert it to fertilizer. I bet you're going to want to buy some fertilizer. Fertilizer is just like natural gas turned into a solid that you can feed to plants. Essentially, that's what it is. It's like, oh, you don't want our gas? Well, we'll just change the form. I bet you'll buy it then. Otherwise, you're going to starve over there in Germany. Which is, actually, that's where things are headed, by the way. So, by the way, if you're wondering where I think all this is going, I think that Russia is going to topple the Ukrainian government quite quickly and, in effect, end the conflict. In other words, the kinetic phase of this is going to be very short. Maybe just 3 days or something like that. And once that's done, then this enters a phase of really diplomacy and economic consequences. So the question is, well, would Russia probably install a Russia-friendly puppet as the new leader of Ukraine? Answer is probably yes. And then they would have to set up their own, you know, new government. They'd have to set up all the diplomatic channels and so on. And they'd have to, I mean, it would be quite a chaotic nightmare to be in Ukraine during this transition. And then the economic consequences from the sanctions and so on. And there'd be a lot of questions among Western nations like, you know, Russia just took Ukraine, but then we are trying to punish Russia with economic sanctions. But that means punishing the people of Ukraine who are innocent and were just caught in the middle. Like, well, so if the people of Ukraine are suffering because of our sanctions, does that make us bad? You know, Western nations asking themselves these questions. It's a complex thing. But I think that's where this is going. Now, since Biden says he's not going to send U.S. troops into Ukraine, what options does the U.S. have other than economic sanctions? And one of the answers is, of course, cyber warfare. And this has been openly discussed. The USA is considering cyber attacks upon Russia. It's reported Biden has been presented a menu of options for massive cyber attacks against Russia. Well, you know what? The Russian people are pretty darn good at cyber warfare themselves, as we've seen lately. You know, a lot of websites of the Ukraine government and Ukraine banks and so on were taken offline. Then again, there were cyber attacks against RT.com. I think it was offline all day yesterday. DDoS attacks. Some Russian government websites and military websites also being taken down and so on. There's a lot of cyber warfare taking place. But I want to remind you of something, and I forgot who said this. I'm thinking it was Obama, but it might have been Trump. But one U.S. president relatively recently said that if the U.S. is hit with cyber attacks, that the U.S. reserves the right to retaliate with kinetic or nuclear weapon systems. Now, maybe you remember who that was. I can't recall. But some U.S. president said that. So that means that if Russia unleashes, you know, cyber attacks against U.S. financial institutions, that Biden could, you know, conceivably, theoretically retaliate by launching nuclear weapons. I'm not saying he's going to do that. That would be incredibly insane. But cyber warfare has now been folded into the, what you might call the portfolio of possible military retaliation or responses in scenarios of international warfare. So here's the question. Remember how I think it's Biden's goal, i.e. Obama's goal, to have Putin nuke the United States. I think that's their goal. They want to take out the U.S. completely. They need Putin to launch nukes against America. How would they do that? And I think the answer is a cyber warfare escalation where the U.S. military engages in very aggressive cyber warfare attacks against Russia and Russia's infrastructure and Russia's military and Russia's power grid and so on and so forth in the hopes that Russia would retaliate against the U.S. in the same way that the U.S. now has a posture of saying that it can retaliate against other countries if the U.S. is attacked with cyber weapons. In other words, the U.S. wants to use cyber warfare as a stepping stone to an escalation that convinces Putin to launch nukes. Now, fortunately for the world, I don't think Putin's going to take the bait on that. And I think there's a very, very real rational reason behind that. And that is that right now, Putin, you know, he can explain away his actions as saying that, Russia was threatened by the continued expansion of NATO weapons through Ukraine and Ukraine's threat to acquire nuclear weapons and so on and so forth. So there is a, you know, there's a disagreement over the region, but Putin has his narrative, his story that he can explain to his people and his soldiers and, you know, his allies around the world where he is saying that he's the good guy. But if you start to launch nukes against other nations, you're no longer the good guy. Well, I guess unless you're America in World War II, come to think of it, America did get away with that. I mean, we bombed Nagasaki and Hiroshima, which were civilian targets, let's be honest. Civilian targets struck by nuclear weapons. There's only one country in the world that's ever done that. That's the United States of America. And, you know, the media said we were the good guys. So I guess we have to rethink this. Maybe Russia could use the same excuse. Remember in World War II, when we unleashed atomic bombs against Japan, it was said that we saved lives by doing it, right? That was the story that we were all told, or our parents and grandparents, that it saved lives because it ended the war, a war which would have otherwise cost maybe 500,000 U.S. troops if we had to take Japan in, you know, street by street, block by block fighting in cities like Tokyo. We would have lost hundreds of thousands of troops. So the nuclear weapons saved lives. Well, isn't that an interesting and very dangerous precedent that the United States set in the 1940s? What if other countries say, well, we like that logic. We're going to use the same logic. We're going to nuke you first and say that it saved lives of our soldiers not having to invade and conquer you. Right? Because again, the U.S. kind of rolled that precedent out. Can other countries make the same claim? Or is that claim only allowed to the United States, you see? Which kind of gets back to what I was mentioning earlier. If we're going to have international rules, they should be universal rules. There can't be just one nation in the world that gets to break all the rules and gets to be the world's bully and just say, oh, the rules don't apply to us. Which, oh my goodness. But personally, I doubt that Putin is going to take that bait unless there's some other kind of insane escalation that I'm not even aware of yet, which I hope there isn't. But the reason I mention all this is because I think you and I need to watch out for Biden intentionally trying to escalate this, because he's not getting the big emergency yet that he really needs. Remember this. Biden, Obama, same thing at this point. They need to cancel the midterms. They need to have martial law. They need to nullify the Second Amendment and have gun confiscation. They need an excuse to round up their political enemies and throw them into death camps. They need a big, big emergency, something as big as World War III. And they're not there yet. You know, Russia and Ukraine in this conflict, you know, as big as it is kind of the biggest action on the European continent since World War II, I would think. But it's not big enough for Biden to just cancel the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and get away with it. So they need something much bigger. What do you think they have in mind for ways to achieve that? All right. So, I mean, I've given several options over the last several podcasts, you know. They could wage an attack. I'm saying the U.S. deep state could attack the financial institutions of America with a false flag cyber attack and blame it on Russia. Or they could take down the power grid in America, cause chaos and lawlessness, and then there could be a declaration of martial law. Or there could be just the whole financial reset. Maybe that's where this is going. Maybe the NATO nations, maybe they're going to try to whip up you know, Putin enough to strike out in some way, and then they'll just pull the trigger on the debt bomb implosion, just crash all their own debt, wipe it off the books, and then launch new central bank digital currencies and see who's gullible enough to sign up for that. And they'll just blame it all on Putin. You know, when people walk into the bank, like, what happened to all my deposits? Is that, it's Russia's fault, right? That's how this is going to go. It's always Russia's fault. How did I lose all my purchasing power of my dollars? It's Putin. He did it to you. It had nothing to do with money printing. Nothing to do with debt spending. Nothing to do with bailouts. It's all Putin's fault. And if you start to ask questions like, how does Putin claiming the Donbass region, how does that steal the purchasing power of the dollars I earned? Like, why are my dollars down to zero? You'll be told that if you question anything, you're a terrorist. You just have to believe the narrative. Otherwise, you'll be locked up, which actually kind of makes America the new Soviet Union, doesn't it? Come to think of it. Right? I mean, maybe Russia doesn't have to do anything to conquer America, since America has been turned into a Soviet-style fascist state anyway, or Marxist state, communist state. Now, if you speak out, you're the enemy, and you can be disappeared, and you just steal all your money in Canada. It's like, I'm pretty sure this was what Yuri Bezmenov warned about. Remember, he was the whistleblower. He escaped the Soviet Union back in the 1980s, and publicly gave a series of lectures about what Russia was planning to do. And if you go through that series, you know, Bezmenov series, like, everything's been done. It's like, we're going to infiltrate your schools. We're going to take over your Congress. We're going to teach generations that America is bad. We're going to incite race wars. We're going to rig elections, all of it. It was all the Soviet blueprint for how to take over America. It's all been done. It's like Putin doesn't have to attack America ever. America's already been conquered by seemingly the communists. You know, especially with the rigged 2020 election, that was the final coup. That was the end of the republic as we know it, frankly. So maybe they're getting close to just pulling the lever on the collapse of the money supply, just crashing everything to zero, blaming Putin. And then saying, well, that's why you're all poor now. That's why you have nothing. Make sure you be happy. You know, as Klaus Schwab says, you will own nothing and be happy. You know, spoken like Jabba the Hutt. Uka, uka, solo. So if we zoom out and look at the big picture here, all right? It looks like the current government of Ukraine is going to fall. Looks like Russia is going to occupy at least the government centers of Ukraine, and then we're going to go into the diplomatic and economic phase. This is going to have a very strong influence, a negative influence, on the world trade of wheat and corn and soy and a lot of metals and minerals that come out of Ukraine, like aluminum and copper, some lithium and some manganese and cobalt, a few others. So essentially what it means is everything in the world is going to get more expensive, including oil. Gold and silver are spiking up, you know, because of the uncertainty factor. But food's going to get more expensive, and minerals are going to get more expensive, which means everything made from minerals, which is almost everything, is going to get more expensive. So, feels like the economic sanctions are actually targeting us, doesn't it, right? That's what it, I mean, we're getting hit with the economic weapons. And then adding to it, Biden and his regime and the central bank just keep printing more money as if they're going to print their way out of this problem caused by too much printing and too much debt and too much fiat currency. It feels like, you know, frankly, okay, right now it feels like we're all Ukraine and we're all getting invaded and attacked and hit with cruise missiles by our own governments. Like, and we're all being hit with economic sanctions by our own governments. Our governments are looting from us every day, stealing our money. And in Canada, literally just looting your bank account. But even everywhere else, money printing is stealing your money because it's devaluing the currency. Everything you have in the bank is slowly vanishing because your government is running essentially economic warfare against you. And in the U.S., The Biden regime is actually pushing big tech to censor certain voices. So we have, you know, essentially a USSR regime in power in America that's pushing censorship and trying to take away firearms and looting our money and lying to us and then trying to murder us with biological weapons that are mislabeled vaccines. And yes, Putin may be striking targets with hypersonic missiles, but we're all getting hit with like subsonic spike protein is circulating around our blood at relatively slow speeds, but still causing tremendous damage over time. Doesn't it feel like we're all living in the killing fields right now? No, I don't think I'm the only one who experiences it that way. It's like we're under attack from every vector, our health, our money, our freedoms, our speech, our religion, the future of our nation, our democracy, our elections. It's all under attack constantly, and our culture. And our culture. And I love how the corporate media was all sob story about, oh, Putin is destroying the cultural, historical statues and culture centers of Ukraine. And I'm like, have you looked at Antifa and Black Lives Matter lately in America? Have you looked at the radical leftists tearing down statues in America? The media never had a problem with that. Like, what, our corporate media only cares about the cultural history of Ukraine, but not America? Oh, they only care about the borders of Ukraine, but not the borders of America? Oh, they care so much about the people of Ukraine, which I understand. I care about all people everywhere. But what about the people of America too, huh? Why is our media at war with us, but pretends to care so much about people somewhere else? And the answer is, it's all deception. It's all lies. It's all run by Satan. It's all a war on your mind. So, you know, we're under attack in America. Yes, there's a 5G war on you. There's a chemtrail war. You know, there's a pesticide war, a glyphosate war. There's a spike protein war. You know, pharmaceuticals, plasticizer chemicals in the food, the gender benders. There's a war on your gender, right? There's a war on your hormones. There's a war on your fertility. There's a war on your mind. And it goes on and on and on. It's a war on your religion, a war on your God, a war on your history, a war on your culture, a war on your children, the war on your family, on and on. But you're only supposed to pay attention to one war, and that's Putin's war. No other wars count, according to the corporate media and the White House. They don't care about Americans being attacked in all these other dozens of ways. The only attack that counts is Putin's attack. There's even a war on history, right? They're trying to purge all the history books of white people, trying to change the history of math because too many mathematicians were white and too many philosophers were said to be white because they were Greeks. It doesn't even make any sense. The left-wing schools are like, well, they were white men with philosophies. We have to, no, they were Greeks. We would call them immigrants, you moron. they're from Greece. Yeah, that means they're, if they come to America, they would be immigrants, you know? They would be immigrants. I thought you were pro-immigrants. Well, not if they're white philosophers. Like Plato must go. There's this one philosopher that we really don't like at all. His name is Socrates, and he's just the worst. So, in summary, you know who's really tearing down our world? It's the radical leftists, it's the Marxists, it's the globalists, the anti-humanists, the Satanists. And in most cases, those are all the same people. That's who's destroying our world. And without their destruction, we would all be more free. We would all be happier. We would all be healthier. We would all have access to more knowledge and more solutions. Everything from free energy to medical technology to natural herbal cures that we could actually talk about without being threatened by the FDA. I mean, humanity, we have the resources and the knowledge and the blessings to be free, to be abundant, to be joyous. But, you know, Satan infiltrated the institutions of our world, i.e. education, teachers' unions, you know, governments and so on. And all they want to do is destroy everything that is good. Oh, and they run the CCP and big tech and so on and so forth. There we go. So as I started off with here today, join me in prayer for all of humanity. Let's pray for the liberty and the safety and the joy of every human being. And in my mind, to me, every human being deserves our prayers, whether they're Russian or Ukrainian or Christian or Muslim, whether they're, you know, Jewish or whether they're Sikhs or Hindus or black or white or Indian or whatever. Everybody deserves the right to live, the right to experience joy, the right to the natural abundance that we deserve that has been taken from us. And as I say every day, the really big picture solution to all of this is that we, the people of this world, our brothers and sisters, fellow human beings on planet Earth, we must dismantle and take down the globalist cabal of evil demons and Satanists and anti-humanists and eugenicists and depopulation pushers, you know, bioweapons engineers and all these people. We got to take them down by dismantling their systems through peaceful means so that we can be free and we can unleash a future human civilization rooted in economic abundance and a golden age of knowledge and creativity for humanity. And I believe we can do that. I believe we will do it. But let's be clear about the steps required to get there. And what we're witnessing right now is the grand global awakening, which unfortunately requires a lot of people to suffer before they open their eyes and say, whoa, what's going on? Why is the government stealing my bank account? You know? I think Canada did the world a favor. Canada just red-pilled like half the planet. It's like, whoa, really? They can just steal all your money? Yep. That was an incredible red-pill moment. We got to thank Trudeau for that, or Freeland, I guess, in her case. Little Nazi granddaughter there. She did the world a favor. Just admitted they're all a bunch of Nazi thieves and lunatics. It's like an incredible red-pill moment in the history of the world. But watch for more red pill moments, because yes, these governments are going to do more insane, crazy things. And remember, the greatest enemy of humanity right now, it's not Russia. It's not hypersonic missiles. It's not weapon systems. Right now it's biological weapons. Which is the vaccines. The greatest threat to humanity right now is the spike protein vaccine. That's what's killing people. In huge numbers, over 1 billion will die from the vaccines that have already been administered. So, you know, if you're looking for a Holocaust, you don't have to look very far. Just look down the street at your local pharmacy. That's where the Holocaust is being administered, one shot at a time. And if you're going to point the finger at somebody and say, oh, you're bad, then, you know, get the priorities straight about who's the worst or which institutions are the worst, you know? Sort that list of yours in your mind and don't focus on, you know, minor issues when we're all being hit with a massive spike protein tidal wave that's designed to wipe out the human race, okay? That's the far bigger threat against us all. Now, I apologize that I did not offer practical solutions today, but I do think, I hope, that I gave you some practical perspective that might actually reduce anxiety about what's going on with Russia and Ukraine. I mean, we got to keep it all in perspective. And also, in the end, as I say almost every day, I think we're going to win this fight for human freedom. But what we're watching is how this thing plays out, okay? So take it, you know, one day at a time, watch for the signs, stay prepared, you know, get your money out of the fiat currencies any way you can to protect it, so that when the mass looting begins or the reset happens, you don't lose as much. We're all going to lose something, but try to minimize your losses when that happens, and be ready for, you know, sky high food prices. Be ready for sky high fuel prices. I mean, just get prepared. And then you can reduce your anxiety as we navigate all this together. These are going to be very difficult times. There's no question about it, but we can make it through. We have each other. We have God on our side, and we're incredibly well-informed and ready compared to most people in the world. We are the most blessed people in the sense that we have knowledge and awareness and solutions and, you know, literally have God on our side. So be thankful for all of that and help spread the blessings and prayers to all the other people across the world. Pray for peace. And I'll be back with you tomorrow. Thank you for listening today. I'm Mike Adams, of course, the Health Ranger. Check out naturalnews.com, brighteon.com, also brighteon.tv, and brighteonradio.com for audio-only broadcasts every day, Monday through Friday. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.